So I want to talk about black hole and topological string. So I chose this subject because, of course, this conference is about topological string. But I want to point out that what we are discussing in this conference has close relation to physics of black hole. And this relation actually is very much in the line of recent development in relating open string theory to closed string theory, so-called open-closed string duality. In fact, black hole has to do somehow with open string, and the kind of closed topological string I'm going to talk about is related to the closed one. So it is an example of open string, closed string duality. Now, in order to explain that, I have to go to some background story about string theory. This is not the topological string theory I'm going to talk about in the first quarter of this talk. This is about the full superstring theory and type 2A or 2B superstring. If you like, these string theories are kind of mother of type A or type B model topological string. Actually, the reason that most of the physicists who are not necessarily mathematically inclined are interested in topological string at all is that this A or B type topological string theory compute for you very important physical observables of this type 2A or 2B string theories that are more directly related to the construction of unified theory of forces and matter in nature, the actual nature. So that's the motivation for many physicists to study topological string. So I thought at least it'd be good to, even though I'm addressing to mostly mathematics audience, I thought it may be at least culturally entertaining to mention a little bit about this type of development. So I realize that I'm preparing for the talk. Getting already warm, so. So I'm going to talk for the next 10 minutes or so, particular brain in type 2B string theory called D3 brain in 2B string. Okay? So this is somewhat related to the Lagrangian three brains in the B model in this kind of relation between the physical type 2 string and topological string. Now, this D3 brain in type 2B string has various important properties, and let me mention a few of them. So the first important thing is that, so for example, in the flat 10-dimensional space, it can extend into three space and one time direction. So it sweeps out four-dimensional subspace of 10-dimensional space-time, and on which open string can end. And these give rise to some degrees of freedom on D brain. Physicists call them collective modes. Excuse me? Oh, this is 10-dimensional Minkowski space. Yeah, this refers to the signature of the Minkowski metric. And yes, and so the low energy limit of this theory, in particular, if you restrict yourself to the lowest excited mode of open string, it gives rise to n equal 4 supersymmetric gauge theory in this four-dimensional subspace. Okay, so this is one of the players of this story today. So this is a side. This is going to be eventually the degrees of freedom of the black hole. So when I talked about, for example, counting the number of states of black hole, I will be referring to loosely to the structure of the Hilbert space of this gauge theory. So in particular, the structure of the ground state of this gauge theory. The second important thing is that the three brains carry magnetic charges. So superstring theory has various higher rank tensor field, which has whose exterior derivative is the field strength. And each D brain carries different set of charges with respect to those fields. So if you have a point particle like D0 brain, it carries electric charge and dual magnetic charge. And similarly, D3 brain is charged with respect to five form field strength. So by this, I mean the following. So suppose I ignore this space-like extension of D-brain and draw a caricature of the world volume of D-brain as this kind of curve. So this is supposed to be three plus one-dimensional or four-dimensional subspace. So, but then in 10 dimensions, it can intersect with the five-dimensional cycle. And then you can integrate this five form. And if you have single D3 brain, if you have one D3 brain, then if you integrate this five form around the five cycles that surround the D3 brain, then it integrates to V1. That's what we mean by D3 brain is charged with respect to five form field strength. This is analog of, say, magnetic monopole in three dimensions. If you want to compute a magnetic charge or magnetic monopole in three dimensions, three spatial dimensions, you consider two spheres that surround the monopole and integrate the magnetic field on it. And if it gives one, then we say that the magnetic charge is one. So that's what we mean by this D3 brain carries magnetic charges. And the third important thing, so this is the last important property of D3 brain that I want to mention, is that its geometry, so-called near horizon geometry, is simple. May we discuss let's have this kind of discussion at the end, if that is okay with you.
Excuse me, could you please keep the discussion
for after the book? Who are you? I'm an organizer of the conference. Oh, excuse me. I'm not starting with, would you please be quiet? Okay. So by this I mean the following. So D-brain has some four-dimensional subspace of this 10-dimensional space. And then these are sourced to this magnetic field, but these also have tensions. So that means that it's coupled to energy momentum. It has non-zero energy momentum tensor, so it curves the space. Having the energy means that the space is curved. So then so there is a solution to Einstein equation with this magnetic flux in the neighborhood of this D-brain. So then you can ask what happens if you approach it to the D-brain and what kind of geometry you have near the D-brain. Okay? So it turns out that the geometry near these D-brains are quite beautiful and simple. And if you have a flat D-brain, then the metric in this near the D-brain turns out to be of this form. So I apologize for writing coordinate in front of you. So this is a metric which becomes which is asymptotic form of the metric near the locus of D-brain. So let me explain. So this is, as you recognize, the metric for flat four-dimensional Minkowski space. And that is a coordinate on this subspace. So this is a four-dimensional subspace, three spatial extension because it's D3-brain, and then time direction. And the metric on this is this Minkowski space metric. And then you have a coordinate sort of transverse, so measuring the distance from this D-brain. And that is this U. And then in addition, since this is embedded in 10-dimensional space, so there is a 5-dimensional sphere that surrounds it. And then this is the metric for the sphere. And the interesting thing about this is that if you have a flat space, and if you have these three brains sitting here, then of course the radius of the circle becomes zero as you approach it to this point, if you choose the radial coordinate. But it turns out that because of various effects, in particular because of the 5 form, the space is curved so that the volume of the 5 sphere remains constant. It never shrinks as you approach to the 3 brain. So that's why there is no U-dependent factor in this. And if you look at this geometry, then you recognize that this is the metric for nothing but 5-dimensional anti-digital space, which is the Lorentzian version of the 5-dimensional hyperbolic space, the maximally symmetric 5-dimensional space with negative cosmological constant, times the 5-dimensional sphere. So this was the basis for Maldacena's conjecture, which is sort of mother of all open closed string duality, that this N equal 4-gauge theory, that is collective degrees of freedom of the three brain, should be equal to closed string theory on this geometry. So this is open string, and this is closed string. Okay? So this is the mother of all the open closed string duality, and I try to explain that in a colloquial way for now. But today, so this is about flat space. Now, I think that most of us are interested in curved space. And so I'll be considering a little bit more twisted sort of curved example. And the curved example I want to talk about is a case when 10-dimensional space is not flat, but curved. So compactify 10 flat dimensions to 4 dimensions by using 6-dimensional Carabial space. And this is the kind of situation physicists are interested in because we live in four-dimensional Minkowski space, and we want to see this internal space to be hidden from our everyday experience by Carabial space. Okay, so now there are natural D3 brains that we can think of in this kind of situation. Namely, we have Carabial space tensored with Minkowski space, and then I pick special Lagrangian, which I call gamma. So this is a three-dimensional cycle, special Lagrangian. In topological string, we typically consider only Lagrangian condition. But for superstring, actually, you need to impose so-called special condition called special Lagrangian, extended in one time dimension, which I denote by L. So we consider gamma times L as a subspace of 10-dimensional space, where gamma is a 3-cycle in Carabial, and L is 1-dimensional space in Minkowski direction. Nice thing about this is that something like that also holds for this level. That is that if you go again near the locus of this D3 brain, both in this Minkowski space direction and this Carabial direction, you can simultaneously go to near this D3 brain. You can write down the metric generated by this source and see what this metric looks like. And it turns out that metric is nothing but that of the Carabial space itself, localized in this region, of course, times that of the anti-Dojita space, but two-dimensional sphere. And this ADS 2 times S 2 part, of course, come from this area, where ADS 2 is two-dimension. One dimension is, of course, along this D-brain. The other direction is the radial direction. And two spheres, just two spheres that surround this D-brain. But with the fluxes that comes from the fact that these D-brains are charged with respect to this 5-fold. Okay? And this is a very interesting case. And so you can consider variation of Mardacena in this case, where you can say that closed string theory on Carabial space times ADS2 times S2 is the same as low energy degrees of freedom that come from open string ending on D-brain on Carabial space. And this is actually the physics motivation behind this conjecture for between black hole and topological string, about which I believe Mina Aganagic gave some evidence based on specific example. Okay, so any question about ADS-CFT correspondence, and in particular applied to this Carabial setup? This is not a proof or anything. This is just some kind of fantasy story that we want to... So this is a fantasy of string theory that from which we want to deduce some consequence which can be tested by mathematical method, and that's what I want to talk about. Excellent. Yeah. So eventually we want to understand what the open string dynamics of this one, and this is going to be a gauge theory. And in the Mina's example she talked about yesterday, it's going to be related to this Q-deformed two-dimensional Young-Mills theory. Right. So actually she was talking about type 2A, and this is type 2B. She was talking about A model, and this is a B model example, because I'm structured my talk so that in the first half of my talk, I'm going to talk about B model. And then I take mirror, and then just to confuse you. And then we're going to talk about, touch on some of the examples she talked about, because it, for geometric setup, I thought B model is easier to explain. But it is true that so I'm going to explain you how Riemann surface and the four cycles comes about in a similar context. There is a source. So D brains are source to this magnetic field. Okay. So so I would like to first talk about a little bit more about this near horizon geometry of the three brain wrapping on three cycle in Carabial space. And if you have, so the interesting thing about this is that if you have D-brain wrapping on some compact Carabial cycle, like this one here, then this gives rise to point particle in four dimension. And if you have a point particle in four dimension, the kind of things you want to know is what is the mass of that particle, for example. And there's a beautiful formula that gives you the mass of that particle. So if you have D3-brain on some cycle gamma, in Carabial space, so this is the three cycle, then this gives rise to point particle in four dimensions, and you can consider mass of that particle, and there is a formula for that. BPS stands for this particular state that preserves supersymmetry, and it is expressed as e to the k times w square. So let me explain what this is. So w is basically the integral of holomorphic freeform on this particular cycle. And K is a scalar form for the moduli space of complex structure, which is given by such that e to the minus K is an integral of omega wedge omega bar on the Calabi-Yau space. So that this combination is independent of the scaling of the holomorphic three form. So this is the mass of the D-brain. You can also write this formula in a very nice way by using the flux. So I think that it is since I'm talking about in front of the mathematics audience, it should not be very difficult to explain. I don't even probably have to explain you that, don't have to explain to you that this W can also be written as integral over the entire Calabi-Yau space times this F2 just around the D-brain on four-dimensional direction. And integral is this five-form magnetic flux wedged with omega. Just because five-form, so this is the definition of this five-form, and five-form is defined so that it intersects with this cycle of, so if you just do this integration by part, then you can see that this is going to be equal to that. Okay. Now, this is an example. This is an example of what is called the Gukov buffer Witten superpotential, which appears in the recent literature about so-called flux compactification. And so this is a particular example, if you like, of flux compactification, where you are compactifying 10-dimensional space to two non-compact space with Calabi-Yau times two sphere. So of course, in the recent discussion about flux compactification, mostly centered on compactification to four dimensions for obvious physical interest, but you can consider compactification to other dimensions. And if you are, for example, interested in two-dimensional compactification to two-dimensional antidata space, then you can have five-form flux in the game. And then this is related to what is called Gukoku buffer Witten superpotential in that case. So let me discuss a little bit of some explicit, not explicit, but parameterize this situation a little bit more explicitly. So let's specify some homology cycle on which these D-brain wraps. So choose a basis for H3 of this Calabi-Yau space to be AI BI, where of course I goes from 0 to H21. And then basis for this dual three form to be alpha I, beta I, so that they are normalized in the standard way. Okay, so then this W, if you have, I forgot to say, so you can consider not only one D3 brain, but you can have D3 N D3 brain wrapping on some three cycle and M D3 brain wrapped on another three cycle, etc. So in general, you can consider the sum of all the cohomology class of all D3 brains parameterized by the kind of the following set of integers. We can say that we can have QI brains on AI cycle and PI brains on BI cycle. So I choose them so that they intersect in a standard way. So then, if you have this kind of situation, then you can evaluate the BPS mass of the resulting black hole having these kind of charges and express it in terms of the superpotential W as in this way. Where, of course, as usual, I'm summing over all the index I. Okay. So this is good that we are summing over all cycles. So we are, this will give us all the possible types of D3 brain wrapping various cycles in Calabi-Yau space. Now, so this will give rise to the mass of this black hole, if you like, the four-dimensional black hole that comes from wrapping D3 brain on compact cycle in Calabi-Yau space. Now, you can ask, so fix the homology cycle of this D3 brain wraps around. When this object becomes lightest, what is the dependence of this mass? So obviously, this mass is a function of the complex moduli of Calabi-Yau space. And then you can ask when this black hole becomes lightest. In fact, there are some physical situations in which this kind of question becomes relevant. And you can answer that question by taking variation of BPS mass with respect to that, and then set equal to zero. Okay, now, the solution to this can be very concisely written by using the following. So let's write xi to be period of holomorphic freeform on ai, and fi to be its dual, integral omega on the dual. By the property of the moduli space of Calabi-Yau, or so-called special geometry, this can be written as derivative of some single function, f of x, which is going to be what is called prepotential in string theory. And using this condition becomes equivalent to the following set of conditions, that the real part of xi is equal to pi, and the real part of fi is equal to qi. So fix the homology class of D3 brain wrapping on Calabi-Yau cycle require us to change the moduli of Calabi-Yau so that the mass becomes extrematized. And you can show that there is a simple relation between the period of holomorphic freeform and the corresponding homology class of D3 brain. Okay? So this is a nice set of equations. You have as many equations as the number of periods. So that means that generically, this would completely fix the Calabi-Yau moduli. So so the value of superpotential is going to be related to the entropy of the corresponding black hole. So that's the next story. So namely, by that I mean it's related. So his question was that if you know this, then you can substitute that back into superpotential. And what does that mean? It actually counts the number of ground state of the corresponding gauge theory. So that's an example of closed string, open string duality. Because by closed string, we are talking about the geometry of Calabi-Yau. Open string, we are talking about the gauge theory computation. Here, we are doing purely the geometry computation. And that leads to the computation of the number of ground state of the corresponding gauge theory. Okay, so this has actually a very interesting set of computation. The very interesting set of points. This specifies some discrete set of points. So if you sweep around all possible homology class of this free cycle, then it gives you some discrete set of points on the moduli space of Calabi-Yau. And people, in particular like Greg Moore, have been investigating whether these have any arithmetic significance. And there are some suggestions that in some cases, these lead to single out Caravaggio space with complex multiplications and those kind of things. And so there are some interesting story about that. I should also point out that this, as I said, is an example of compactification, but down to two dimensions with magnetic flux in string theory. And there are analogous stories, as I said, compactification down to four dimensions. And this is a kind of situation that is more extensively studied in recent years. In particular, Mike Douglas of Rutgers has been studying that. And so you can, so when you hear about the story of Mike Douglas, and if you have, might have heard about that, you can regard this as kind of doing the two-dimensional version of what he's doing in that context. Okay. Yes. Exactly. So that's why I'm minimizing the mass, which is invariant under rescaling. So W, as I said, is not a function of the moduli space. It's a section of some bundle, line bundle of the moduli space. But this combination is a function. So it makes sense to minimize it. So when I write this equation, what I really meant was that, of course, this equation is one dimension higher than the dimension of the complex moduli space. So that means that this fixes not only the complex moduli, but this also gives you a canonical normalization of omega related to the the charges. Now, in classical geometry, the scaling of omega has no invariant meaning. However, if you go to quantum string theory, namely higher genus string theory, then of course the normalization of omega is inversely related to the string coupling constant. So this fixes not only the complex moduli, but there is additional thing that fixes, and that is the string coupling constant that coupled to the genus of the Riemann surface. Okay. So let me then state. Give a statement then. So there is this, therefore, this two-dimensional version of so-called ADS CFT correspondence, which relate the two closed string theory in two-dimensional Antzeta space times S2 times Caravaggio space to some low energy degrees of freedom of open string. So what are we relating? Well, one thing is the open string on these three branches on P1 times PI times AI plus QI times BI. Namely, wrap PI D3 brain on cycle that is homologous to AI, and the QI D3 brain on cycle homologous to BI, and consider dynamics of, consider system of open string ending on those, and consider low energy limit of that. That's some kind of gauge theory. And so that's one side. And so analogous to the Maldacena's conjecture is that this is equivalent to be closed string on Caravaggio 3 times ADS 2 times S2 with the moduli of Caravaggio 3 fixed by the equation that I wrote over there. So in particular, the computation of prepotential or topological string computation compute for you some quantity in type 2B string theory in this geometry. So then it is a question exactly as Ami asked. What is that meaning for this gauge theory side, open string side? And the answer that I claim is that this actually counts the number of ground state of this this ribbon. Okay. But this is a general statement, and so you can consider some other observable here and some other observable here. And if those, both of them are computable, then you can, in principle, try to go out and check other aspects of it. And that topological string amplitude are particularly nice computable class of observable for which we can test this conjecture directly, as Mina did yesterday. Okay, so one consequence of that, what I'm going to discuss is one consequence of that. And so basically, on one side, so the particular consequence, do you call it lemma in mathematics? I'm not sure. Is that of this, is that if you compute the Witten index, of the gauge theory on D3 brain. That is that, so you have a gauge theory that comes from an open string ending on D3 brain. So you quantize that, and then there is going to be Hilbert space. With respect to this choice of these charges, and then you can compute the Witten index, omega pq, which is going to be trace of minus 1 to the f, where f is the grading of the Hilbert space. Because we are considering supersymmetric gauge theory, so naturally there is a grading coming from the number of fermions. And then and thank you very much. So these gauge groups are related to these p and q's. So P and Q is a number of D brains. So if you have a P D brain wrapping on particular cycles, that gives rise to UP gauge theory on that. Now here you have a more complicated system because you wrap D brain for various topologically distinct cycles, some of which have intersections. So this gives rise to more complicated gauge theories of the type actually we had. So you may think of this as actually four-dimensional generalization of two-dimensional story that we heard from Rodansky this morning. So he was talking about two-dimensional conformal field theories, which is defined on two-dimensional surface, with not the flat rim, flat modulized, flat smooth two-dimensional manifold, but CW complex, namely that it can have edges or what you call, I forgot what he called, the theme and things like that. And here you can consider four-dimensional version of that because you have generically lots of homology cycles in Calabi-Yau space, and they are intersecting with each other. And we wrap all possible, we consider all possible ways that we can wrap D brains on them, and they locally are away from themes or intersections. Those are gauge theories, but then there are intersections, and then there are some special things happen, just like what we had this morning, but four-dimensional version of what that would happen here. And you can write down Lagrangian for this kind of system. I'm not going to go into that, but I'm just assuming that you can make sense of this quantum field theory, because after all, this is four-dimensional or lower quantum field theory. The bulk is four-dimensional, but then the intersections have three dimensions and lower dimensions. And so anyway, these are the kind of gauge theories that we are considering. So if you get the answer to your question is that this PQ specifies the gauge group. In the Mina's talk yesterday, she only considered one type of homology cycle. So if you wrap ND brain on it, then you have UN gauge theory on that cycle. But you can consider more generic situation. So omega PQ is equal to trace over this Hilbert space of minus 1 to the F. And to regularize it, one may introduce some Hamiltonian like that. Okay. So this is one computation one can consider defining in this setup. Yes. Well, actually, this was discussed yesterday. And so there is some kind of causality issue here. But (laughs) So this is the open string side of the story. So I can erase the open string side. So the closed string side, so this is supposed to be computed by some computation on type 2 closed string on ADS2 times S2 times Calabi-Yau space. So what we can do is, so this is a Lorentzian space computation, but this is sort of formulated on the Euclidean space because, for example, you have e to the minus beta h as opposed to e to the I beta h. And so what we can do is analytically continue the anti-Doggett space to hyperbolic space. And then to take trace and e to the minus beta h, if you are familiar with some quantum field theory notation, you may recognize that taking trace with e to the minus beta h, finite temperature computation, is the same as periodically identifying the Euclidean time. So what we consider is that you start with anti-Doggett space, and Euclidean, consider Euclidean version of that, namely two-dimensional hyperbolic space, which is a disk. And then the operation of taking e to the minus beta h times trace is the same as periodically identifying this hyperbolic space by particular isometries. That turns this hyperbolic space into some kind of trumpet. This is single fold hyperbolic. And so that the period of that is going to be beta. So this times two-dimensional sphere times Calabi-Yau space, and compute the partial function of that. Compute the string partition function. So the conjecture that I formulated based on this kind of motivation with Strominger buffer and myself is that this partition function is going to be equal to omega pq that we talked about. Okay, now this is not yet a mathematical statement because I haven't told you how to compute string partition function. But this was actually done in a very nice series of work, more or less, by Lopez Cardoso, DeWitt, and Mohaupt in about 5 years ago. And we came up with their paper because we were sort of looking for computation in physical type 2 string computation for which we only use topological string amplitude. I mentioned earlier that topological string computations are of interest to physicists who are not necessarily interested in mathematics because those compute for you very important class of observables in physics of string compactification to four dimensions. And those are in particular terms in the low energy effective action in four dimensions, but not all the terms. The topological string computation does not compute for you all the terms that you obtain by compactifying string down to four dimensions, but some rather distinguished class of terms that these will compute for you. So we are looking for the kind of physical computation for which only these terms are relevant. And in fact, we discovered that other people have already done it. And so they pointed out that at least when P and Q are large, the asymptotic expansion of this string partition function is computable purely by knowing topological string amplitude. So that was a very nice thing. So let me try to explain. Now I come to topological string amplitude. I said that I'm going to spend the first half of my talk on type 2 string and then second half on topological string. So it's exactly half of my time. So topological string amplitude. So I'm not going to give you a definition of topological string amplitude. Actually, most of the things that you must have heard about is the A model version of that. But so far, I have been talking about it in B model context. But you can imagine a mirror of that situation. So F of G is genus G amplitude in the B model. And actually, this in the case of B model, so genus G amplitude, I mean, so in the case of A model, this compute for your genus G Gromov-Witten invariant. And this can be actually quite nicely expressible in terms of this period, because it happens that in B model, if you express that in terms of this period, then F of G is homogeneous in Xi with degree 2 minus 2g. So genus 0 is degree 2, and if you go to higher genus, you start getting negative degrees. And this can be seen by noting that basically this is a genus G amplitude, a section of Hodge bundle over moduli space of a complex structure of Calabi-Yau space. And so is omega, of course, by definition. And so by checking the degrees of the line bundle for which this is section of, you can arrive at this statement. But this is nice because then you can utilize the additional degrees of freedom that these charges fix. Because I said that you have basically H12 plus 1 choice of basis, and the moduli space is H21 dimension, and what is the remaining one that this is fixing? This is the overall scaling of X. Note that this Fi is also degree 1 under scaling of X. So if you scale X, then P and Q are scaled accordingly, and that scaling degrees of freedom can be regarded as a topological string coupling constant, because that's how this genus G amplitude scales. So actually, I shouldn't be hiding A model too long. So I'm going to be talking about A model also. So in that context, in the case of A model, the mirror symmetry is such that all the three cycles are mapped into even dimensional cycle. So you have 0 cycle, 2 cycle, 4 cycle, and 6 cycles. And so you can choose a basis so that these are quantum period of 0 cycle and 2 cycles, and these are period of 4 cycles and 6 cycles. And in particular, then there is a distinguished cycle that corresponds to 0 cycle. So X0 corresponds to 0 cycle, and other Xi are related to 2 cycles. At least near the large, if you specify which direction is your large volume, then you know what is X0 and what is Xi. And then Kähler moduli, complexified Kähler moduli, are the ratio of these zeros, where I goes from 1 to now H11 for the mirror Calabi-Yau space. And then you see that F of G of X is equal to X naught to 2 minus 2G times FG of something that depends only on T. And then you recognize that 1 over X naught is string coupling. That couples to the genus of the wall sheet Riemann surface. So this is the situation of the A model that I will come back later. Okay. So so there is a relation between this partial function and this topological string amplitude. So what has been known And what we interpreted, so what is known, is the following. So define the following object. So, so if you have genus, G amplitude defined, you can sum this, all this for all genus. Okay, so this is, of course, asymptotic expansion. And we will discuss, I will discuss later whether we have anything to say about its non-perturbative completion or anything of that sort. So, but anyway, for now, let's regard this as asymptotic expansion. In fact, if you are at the attractor fixed point, which fortunately I have not erased, if you are, so what we want to do is to evaluate this at this attractor point. And if you are at the attractor fixed point, then you see that as P and Q becomes large, X grows linearly because these are degree one equations. And the genus D amplitude scale inversely to, as you go to higher and higher genus, they scale inversely to X more and more. So you can regard this as asymptotic expansion in inverse of coupling constant, in inverse of the charges of the black hole, namely the mass of the black hole. And this is actually, physically, this is consistent with what to expect. Because we know that the larger the black hole, the better the semi-classical expansion is. Because when the black hole is large, then the curvature is sort of smeared out and the curvature becomes weak. And when the curvature is weak, then quantum effect can be suppressed. And the non-trivial quantum effect becomes more and more relevant when the black hole becomes smaller and smaller. And so that's when the charge becomes smaller and smaller. So this is the expansion in inverse of the charges of the black hole. So now, curiously, we find that in order to relate to the black hole, we not only have to consider the string topological string amplitude, but should also consider its complex conjugation. And so then let me introduce a symbol for that. So this depends both on X and X bar now. So this is a non-trivial strange situation because normally we only consider holomorphic objects. But here we have to consider this kind of combination of holomorphic and anti-holomorphic relation. Now, so then in that case, so this is the attractor equation that you derive for in a semi-classical approximation. But if you take into account quantum string effects, then what happens is that, first of all, the first equation remains unchanged. First equation remains unchanged, so that means that the real part of XY is still these charges. But imaginary part is determined more non-linearly in terms of the other charge, Q. And so let's temporarily denote the imaginary part to be phi I. Then what happens is that attractor equation can be simply expressed as the fact that this QI is a derivative with respect to this F. Now, if I write this F X as P plus I phi, then F is, of course, function of P and phi. So the attractor equation is simply like that. So what you do is basically F is a very nonlinear function of this X, and therefore P and phi. And then you solve this, and that's the value of X at the attractor fixed point to all order in string loop expansion. And the Whitney index for this kind of computation can also be expressed in a very nice way in terms of this F, and that is this log of omega PQ. Is expressed as QI phi I plus F of P phi. Okay, so this was actually this was not how the originally the entropy was written, but Sturming and Vahan and I looked at their paper and then notice that actually you can simplify the expression into this form. Now, if you look at this equation for 10 seconds, then you notice that actually this is Legendre transformation. So what it means is that entropy of the black hole is the Legendre transformation, at least in this expansion, of topological string amplitude with respect to the imaginary part of the period of holomorphic freeform. So, but this is for the asymptotic expansion in large charge. So this has to be an approximation to something that is more fundamental. So what is more fundamental than Legendre transformation, we thought, and the only thing we knew from undergraduate physics, mathematical method in physics, was Laplace transform. So we conjectured that, therefore, the true width index should be Laplace transform of topological string amplitude. Namely, that E to the F of PQ, that is E to the sum of G of FG of X plus FG of X bar should be where X is equal to P plus I phi, should be equal, well, maybe it's probably more useful to write it in this way, this namely absolute value of sum of FG of P plus I phi absolute value square. So we conjecture that this should be equal to the Laplace transform of the width index. Okay? So this was the conjecture we arrived at by knowing the logic we have that has led us to is that we know that the topological string amplitude compute for you certain physical observable on string theory compactified to four dimension. One of the interesting computations is the computation of the width index of the black hole, for which we have actually this kind of simple expression in asymptotic expansion in large charge. So we just conjectured that the correct answer should be the Laplace transform. Okay, so now it would be nice actually to prove this thing, but we don't have a general understanding of, say, for example, topological string amplitude for compact collabial space at all. So the best we can do, we may still be able to give some direct sort of derivation for that. But the first thing we did was try to check this conjecture in particular example. So that was what Mina talked about. So, yes, please. No. No. So this is a width index. So this is not necessarily positive. So actually, there is an interesting history behind this kind of quantity. This is not the first. This is not what we invented. Actually, this was known from 1930s, where Wigner tried to formulate quantum mechanics in terms of phase space, which then now become known about deformation quantization. So Wigner didn't like the fact that you have to use wave function to describe physical reality. We should be formulating things not as a function of phase space. Function of the Lagrangian submanifold, if you like, but rather function of the phase space. Okay, so what kind of object that you can construct? So maybe this is a divergence that since you raised, and in fact this is probably relevant. So let me just diverge a little bit and discuss that. So we have in quantum mechanics, we have P and Q, which satisfy the canonical commutation relation. It's not a coincidence that we are using the same notation here. So wave function typically is a function of Q only. Okay. Now, we've now introduced the following quantity, which is phi of Q plus phi, psi of Q minus phi e to the minus p phi integrated over phi, and denoted it as omega pq, which is, as you recognize, is a sort of inverse Laplace transform of this relation if you regard psi as topological string amplitude exponentiated. And the motivation of Wigner was to formulate quantum mechanics thoroughly in terms of omega and even try to assign physical meaning to omega as sort of density associated to this corresponding state. In a more modern language of deformation quantization, one can also say, formulate this in a more invariant way as the following, that in that language, for any operator in quantum mechanics, you have some kind of function in the phase space. Not vice versa, but you can construct, for each operator, you can construct function of phase space. Now, if you have a particular state, then you can construct a projection operator onto the state, and then you can ask what is the corresponding function of the phase space. And so that is this omega. So that's another way to understand the Wigner's function. And so this is, if you like, you can say that if topological string Poisson function is a wave function of some quantum mechanical state, then the entropy of black hole is a Wigner's function. Now, there are evidences that that's the correct language to use. And you might have heard about that from Buffa or maybe from Diagraph later. They are attempting to construct 6+1 dimensional system whose quantization gives the wave function, which is actually the topological string amplitude. And in fact, this goes back to the earlier interpretation by Witten, where he showed that holomorphic anomaly equations that this string Poisson function satisfies can be interpreted as a statement of background independence of the quantization of H3 of the Calabi-Yau space, for which this can be regarded as a wave function. So there are some reasons to think that it's actually natural language to use. So in any case, if the topological string Poisson functions, holomorphic ones, is some wave function, then the black hole entropy for the charge PQ is a Wigner function. Now, so coming back to the question of the negative omega, so one of the drawbacks of Wigner's interpretation, which was why it wasn't so popular, was that people discovered that omega can be negative, and they didn't know what to make of negative density and things like that. And in fact, in more recent years, this notation has been found quite useful in various atomic physics, where they denote, they call region of phase space with negative omega very quantum for some reason. But I think that from this perspective, I propose we should call this as very fermionic, because the state with negative omega is actually the fermionic state in this language. In fact, I think that there is some kind of theorem which says that the only wave function for which omega is everywhere positive is a Gaussian. So if you choose a generic wave function, then the you have both bosonic state and the fermionic state. Okay, so that's the conjecture, formulation of the conjecture. And so we try to test it in some example. And that's what Mina talked about. And since Mina talked about it, so I don't have to tell you in detail, but I think it probably is useful to at least make the statement referring to this context. So let me go back to the A model. So I spent most of my talk using the language of B model because it's easier to formulate various geometric objects, but we can translate everything I said in the language of A model like that, where now XI is basically period of zero cycle and two cycle, and the ratio give rise to Kähler moduli. And so in that case, so in the case of B model, we had AI and BI, which are three cycles. And in the case of A model, we can choose A0 to be zero cycle. AI to be two cycles where I goes to 1 to H11, and then BI to be 4 cycle, and then B0 to be 6 cycle. So all possible even cycles, the supersymmetry requires them to be holomorphic. And so if you do that, then P0 is D6 brain flux or magnetic charges. PI is D4 brain charges, and QI is D2 brain charges, and Q0 to be D0 brain charges. Just like D3 brains are charged with respect to five form as a magnetic object, in this case, you have various even dimensional brains which can wrap on these even dimensional cycle of Calabi-Yau space, giving rise to point-like objects in four dimensions. So we are again considering point-like black hole in four dimensions that comes from wrapping these D brains on Calabi-Yau space. And since we believe in mirror symmetry, so, well, at least in perturbative level, mirror symmetry is the exact statement of conformality theory. So that means that everything we said here can be applied in this context. Okay, so Mina's talk is based on the following example. So unfortunately, this is a non-compact Calabi-Yau example. So there are some peculiarities associated to it. And I think Mina perhaps talked about that. But we choose Calabi-Yau to be O minus P plus O P plus 2G minus 2 over genus G, Riemann surface. Now, I hastily add that this G is now part of the target space, has nothing to do with this G of F over G, which is a genus of the worksheet. So you can have any genus worksheet which gets mapped to this total space of this rank 2 bundle and count the Gromov-Witten invariant. This is a nice example because half of that is already done by our friend. And so you'll hear about that. So FG is computed by Brian and Harry Tanda. So we have only half, the other half of the work to do. So this has been already computed. So what we need to do is to compute omega using gauge theory and see whether a relation like that holds. Okay? So we want to do the gauge theory computation. And I think that's what Mina talked about most of her time. So in this case, we consider gauge theory on D brain wrapping on this kind of situation, and then try to find the degeneracy of the ground state. Now, if you consider arbitrary things, then it's difficult because, for example, if you have D6 brain, the world volume is 6 plus 1 dimensional, so you have to consider higher dimensional gauge theory that I don't have much to say. I don't have much control of that. So we consider the only subspace of all possible configurations. So we consider N D4 brains on the total space of the sub-bundle. So this is the four real dimensional subspace of this Calabi-Yau space. So you can consider N D4 brain wrapping on it. And then the world volume theory is therefore UN gauge theory on this geometry. Signature of what? Oh, we are computing ground state, so the space-time signature does not matter. I mean, for Witten index, of course, we want to Euclideanize the four-dimensional time. But, we are only considering the ground state degeneracy. So it doesn't matter. what the signature is. And then no D6 brain. No D6 brain. Okay? So no D6 brain. If we knew how to do the six-dimensional gauge theory computation, we would have considered that also. But since we don't, then we didn't do that. So we only consider the two variables, x0 and x1, namely x0 associated to 6 cycles, and x1 associated to 4 cycles, that is O minus P over sigma of G. Okay? And so just like that, except so there is a relation between this index I. So xi is a quantum period of these cycles. But now these even dimensional cycles. So xi, since there is no D6 brain charge, so this has no real part, and it has purely imaginary part. And in the physics terminology, phi naught is the chemical potential. For Q naught, this is the physics speak for the Laplace transform of Q. And X1 has real part, which has D4 brain charge, which is nominally N. But it turns out that this fiber intersects with the base, not once, but P plus 2G minus 2 times. So if you count the charge, actually, there is some additional thing you have to take into account. So this plus I, phi1, where phi1 is the chemical potential for D2 brain wrapping on the base sigma. Now, so this is a nice setup, because then once we know what are the variables are, we know exactly what the gauge theory variables are. And so we have UN gauge theory on this geometry, and then a number of D0 brain and D6 brain, the number of D0 brain, namely Q0, and the number of D2 brain, namely Q1, are sort of invariants of the gauge, topological invariant of the gauge field configuration. Namely, D0 is nothing but the instanton number, namely the second Chern class of the gauge field configuration, and Q1 is a first Chern class evaluated on the base. So maybe I should write it exactly. So Q0 is a T1 of the bundle, and Q1 is the second Chern class of the bundle that you can. So basically, you consider all the functional integral with this source added to the Lagrangian. And so that's what Mina talked about, and I think that she told you about how to write the gauge theory amplitude, how to relate that into some kind of Q deformation of two-dimensional gauge theory on the Riemann surface. And you can do the large N expansion. Like I said, string coupling constant is inversely related to the charge of the black hole. So in that case, it's N. So therefore, string perturbative expansion is a 1 over N expansion of the gauge theory. This is a familiar story for physicists. In any open-closed string duality, string coupling constant is sort of inverse of the rank of the gauge group. And so this is an example of that kind of situation. And therefore the statement is that if you evaluate this two-deformed partial function of two-dimensional gauge theory, which comes from this kind of situation, then one should, and then do the 1 over n expansion, then one should be able to reproduce the structure that was found in the work. Yes?
So what would you see if you could remove 6 cycles?
So then we can do more check. Namely, in this case, we are only checking this in the locus, if you like, when topological. Well, actually, in this case, there is not much more. Well, that. So if we can do six cycles, then there is a little bit more we can do, because the thing is that, so we are talking about FG as a function of X naught, X1, and basically this is checking at the locus when X naught is pure imaginary, and if you want to be sure that you reproduce completely this function. So T1 or T0 is a Kähler moduli. And the 1 over X0 is string coupling constant. So if you like, we are evaluating it at the locus when string coupling constant is pure imaginary number. And so it doesn't it's not much of a restriction, if you can say. Because after all, we know that the answer is some of, well, if you want to also check that answer is first of all separated into holomorphic and anti-holomorphic T's, then you probably want to do that. But this is not... This won't tell us much. Even if you can do D6 brain, I don't think you will learn much more than that. And since you computed this object as a function only of the Kähler moduli associated to the volume of sigma, so, I mean, we can, for example, consider more complicated D brain configuration and then introduce more Kähler moduli, but since the check is cross-string side is computed for this Kähler moduli. So I think that for this purpose, this is sufficient actually. So although in general, this can be a limitation. That not knowing how to do this six-dimensional gauge theory can be a limitation in general. But in this example in particular, it's not a limitation. Okay, so she has already talked about that. So yeah, you have a question?
Yeah, I think the form
Yeah, so she was writing, I guess, inverse of this relation. Right. Yes. So that's one of the peculiarity that we encounter in this non-compact example, where so what we discovered in that example was that it turned out that the right-hand side is not the single absolute value square, but it's actually sum of various different terms corresponding to adding extra non-compact D brains to that. But I think that this has to do with the peculiarity of the fact that we are doing non-compact Caraviao space. And I still believe that if you consider compact Caraviao case and then do the 1 over n expansion, then you get absolute value square. In non-compact case, there is some issue about whether or not you have to sum over some of the Kähler class also. And some of that can be expressed as sum over configuration of D brains. So I think that that's somehow of a peculiarity. I think genus 1 case, there is no summation. But I think there are, in general, absolute value 2G minus 2 insertion of D brain, additional D brain that. And the sum associated to that. I think that probably need to be understood better. I agree, but I think this is peculiarity coming from the fact that we are considering non-compact examples. So let's see. I have so let's see what I should be talking about. More minutes. Yeah, maybe should I talk about that? Maybe I. So probably I will end my talk by making some further speculation, and my talk has already been lot of speculation, so I don't know whether I should do that, but maybe I should first stop and see if there is any further question. Yes?
Do you have any ideas of what the mirror of this
Carabial threefold? No, I don't. I don't have a good idea of that. Somebody? Excuse me? Yes. No, no. Oh, that. Apologize for my handwriting. How can I do it? So. We don't have any D6 brain. I meant there are no D6 brains. Yes, Amanda. Yeah. Did you raise your hand or? Right. Well, of course, their formula is based on Ward's proposed entropy formula. Yeah, so we are relying on that part. So we have made use of we have arrived at the conjecture using Mohaut this computation by Dewitt et al., which is based on the formula that Ward wrote for entropy with higher curvature terms. So I think one might say that this is also some kind of check of that proposal too. Yes. Thank you. Right. Yeah, that you are quite right about that. So I neglected to mention many important insights that goes into deriving this formula for the entropy using low energy effective theory that you can compute using topological string. So so if you start with 10-dimensional string theory compactified to 4-dimension, you obtain low energy effective theory action expressed in terms of topological string amplitude that contains lots of terms that are unconventional, such as higher derivative terms. And then Bob Ward has a proposal of how to define entropy in such a general situation by computing some kind of net charge, as Amanda said. And so, yes, this is... I think that I'm considering that as an input. I'm assuming that is true. And... So this is sort of so many of these things came into here to arrive at this formula, which we are then checking in this particular example. So this can be regarded as some kind of check of that proposal in this indirect way. Yeah. So thank you for pointing out. So I have assumed many things that I didn't explain here. Okay. So I would like to end with some kind of further speculation. And that is that, so it's kind of interesting that this entropy is expressed as absolute value square of some quite natural object that appear in string theory. And is there any way to make sense of this? So we can invert this relation also to say that the trace of -1 to the F e to the minus beta h, namely this Witten index, can be expressed, so this is this omega, can be expressed as an integral of overlap of the following thing. where this capital F, I meant the sum over all genus amplitude. So it looks like the entropy is given by absolute value square with some additional integral of this topological string wave function. Now, this one is computed for two-dimensional anti-Doita space periodically identified. So we have this kind of trumpet configuration. So you can ask, is there any way to make sense of this relation in a more physical term? So we have a proposal which we are working on, looking for some evidence, to claim that actually this is topological string amplitude is computing some kind of wave function of universe in some situation. So let me explain what I mean by that. So there was a proposal by Hartle and Hawking in early 80s of computing initial condition for the universe with positive cosmological constant, which subsequently expand exponentially as in the inflation scenario. So his proposal was the following. Their proposal was the following. So consider four-dimensional Einstein gravity, with positive cosmological constant. Then, suppose you want to compute the wave function of the universe, which is compact three-dimensional space. Is there any canonical definition of wave function that you can have? And so they pose that question. And if you have that one, then you can start with this and then start use that as an initial condition of the universe. And their proposal was the following. Well, if you have three sphere and if you're looking for a space of positive cosmological constant in four dimensions, it's natural to think about three-dimensional ball, four-dimensional ball that bound three sphere. And then basically, if you do the Euclidean functional integral of Einstein gravity, then in principle, you can define some kind of wave function on the three sphere. Now, this is an interesting proposal. This is ill-defined by itself, because Einstein gravity in four dimensions cannot be quantized directly, at least those of us who work on string theory think so. And so you can ask, what is an analogous wave function of a universe in our case? Well, we have four-dimensional gravity decorated with string excitation. With negative cosmological constant, as in typically the case of the flux compactification. So we have fluxes in Calabi-Yau space. So we have a negative cosmological constant, but the natural analog of S3 in four-dimensional case is S1 times S2, because we have compactification of Calabi-Yau space down to S2 times anti-Doita space. So we have only one spatial direction. So if you are interested in compact space, then the only thing you can do is compactify on S1. So you can ask, is there analog of this kind of construction? Well, there is a natural one, which is that consider half of this periodically identified anti-Doita space. And if this is a wave function of this section, then you can naturally consider gluing them together to compute the amplitude. And if you have half of that given by this, then if you glue both of them together, you reproduce this structure. So I think we are trying to make sense of the statement that somehow this is the case, that if you consider now, string theoretically well-defined functional integral on this geometry and define the wave function of universe from S1 times S2 times Calabi-Yau ala Hartle-Hawking, then the inner product naturally give rise to the entropy of the black hole. And then that explains why the entropy formula has this kind of natural structure at absolute value square of the wave function. So that's something that I would like to think about for the next immediate future. And so that's the end of my talk. Thank you very much.